All right, our agenda for today is here. It's a fairly light agenda. We have an update and discussion about recruiting and a discussion around decentralized identifiers and authorization IO. Any updates or changes to the agenda? Right, let's go ahead and jump into it. The discussion at W3C, actually in the Web Payments Interest Group, is ongoing on credentials and identity. The same people that said they are very interested in identity and credentials continue to say so. We distributed a poll so that they would speak up and sign up for the credential CG / WG recruiting drive. Only a very small handful of them have done that. So it is, I'm probably going to have to pick up the phone and call people directly, mainly because they're really busy and they keep not filling out the poll. And I also noticed going through the recruiting document that we have a couple people in this group that have not signed up. So we're light on numbers, mainly because many of the people, even in the credential CG, haven't signed up, you know, haven't put anything on the poll. So we should review that shortly and make sure that we have those people on there. Eric, it could be the holiday weekend, but we had a call yesterday where we told people to fill out the poll. They just have not gotten around to do that. So I don't think it's a holiday weekend thing. It's either people are busy or they're being nice, and we need to get past the whole whether or not they're being nice or if they're actually busy bit. So anyway, the Web Payments Interest Group has 75 people in it, so hopefully they will. So hopefully we'll pick up a couple from there. Other things that just from a recruiting standpoint that I've done, I got the full list of organizations, AC representatives that were asked to fill out the poll that would probably be interested in credentials or supporting us at W3C. I got the list of people that have not responded yet to Eric Korb and Richard Varn. So hopefully you can have your recruiter people kind of chase after them as well. And I forget how long, I think the list was like 105 people in length, something like that. There were 140 people contacted. Of those, only around 35 have responded so far. And of those, only around 15 to 17 in the affirmative. Which is actually, it's not bad. Let me get a link in here. This is a link not to be shared. So Google spreadsheet on recruiting status. So in IRC, I'm putting a link there. That's not going to be put in the minutes. And it should be shared. Anyone with the link can view. This is the current status on where we are with recruiting. We have around, I think this is 16 organizations. If you scan down the list, we're missing ETS, we're missing Badge Alliance, we're missing Concentric Sky.
But Badge Alliance and ETS.
Sorry, say that again.
Oh yeah, as far as putting a yes in the column of C-Sky, it's not there yet, but it is on the list.
Right.
What do you need from us to say we're there? I'm not quite sure why we're not there.
I need you to fill out the poll.
Oh, the survey. Okay.
The survey,
okay.
And that was sent.
And
to
I somehow received this poll, or
no,
am I not
no,
the official designee?
Your AC, you're not the official designee, your advisory committee representative, Mark Hu, I think.
Hackinen. Oh, Mark Hackinen.
Yeah.
Right. Okay, I'll check with Mark. Thanks. Okay.
Yep. Okay. Okay, so yeah, if you if you're not on this list, that means that you're not down to as supporting the group, and we need you to be down there if you're on the call. And the way to get on this list is to go and fill out the poll. Okay, so that's where we are right now. I think we have 16 on this list, and we have a couple of maybes that may turn into yeses. So that puts us at around 3.75%. W3C requires 5% of the membership to support something before they seriously consider starting it. So we're at 3.75% right now. So Eric is saying Express Script should be script safe. I have changed that. Okay, so let's go down the list and see where everyone is as far as recruiting. So Eric, you're up for Parchment, ScriptSafe, Credly, and National Student Clearinghouse.
Progress. Okay, as I mentioned to you last week, I was going to hold off until this week to contact everybody because of the holiday weekend. So all these are U.S.-based people. So we're going to reach out to them this week for sure.
Okay.
And then I will be speaking to John. And Friday I wasn't able to speak to John, so we were off. So I will speak to him this week and get locked in green.
All right. Just keep in mind that time's running out. We have until the end of July to get these names there, and if we don't have them by the end of July, the likelihood of us getting anything at TPAC is highly unlikely. So we're under time pressure to get yeses from these folks. Nate, any updates on Digital Me, Concentric Sky, EdX, or Descendamoy?
I'm composing a message. I've talked to Wayne, our CSky president, and he sounds positive, but I can't put it as an absolute yes yet. After we have some more conversations today about exactly like what the technical path forward is that we're proposing, I'll be able to talk more clearly with all these folks.
And then, Richard, you had National Retail Federation, American College Testing, CSC, and Accenture.
We've contacted CSC and Accenture. We're waiting to hear back from them. I actually made a personal appeal to the Accenture account reps that visit our company on Thursday or Wednesday last. So they're aware of it. And they're waiting for one of their guys to get back. So we've contacted two. I've got to wait on NRF. I've got another set of things. I'm meeting with about them today at work. And I haven't talked to ACT yet. I figured they'd be gone last week, like Eric, so I'll talk to them this week.
Okay, awesome. Okay, any other updates on recruiting? Does anyone else want to be involved in actively recruiting organizations? That's on the call. Okay. Sunny, what's the status of Badge Alliance? Can we put them down here? Is new org going to be?
As far as who's footing the bill for this money, I'm jumping in. As far as who's footing the bill, it will come out of the new funding, so it won't be a while until that actually, like, the paperwork goes through, but I think you can put them down as a strong maybe, and I can sort of, Sunny and I can probably both lead the effort on making sure that they get signed up.
Okay, Badge Alliance, new org, Sunny, strong maybe. Okay. Is there anyone?
I mean, you could put Barisys down as a yes. I mean, that's just.
Okay.
I just have to get John on the other one. That's Eric.
John Benson is the contact there,
yeah.
Right?
Okay. Yeah.
Are there any other organizations that are missing from here that really should be on here? Richard, my guess is that ETS is going to say yes to this.
Yes, I'll just tell Mark to fill out the survey.
Okay. Richard, Lauren, I'm going to put you down as point of contact for ETS. Okay. Any other organizations?
I have spoken to IMS Von Abel, and he said that they don't typically join because they're a standards body themselves, but they would help recruit support for the project. So I'm not really going to have a chance to. I'll have to reach out for him myself and see if I can take him up on his offer. But I think the IMS membership is absolutely a target.
Right.
Now, for example, I would hope that somebody that's not on here is Blackboard.
Who's going to recruit them? IMS?
I think that could be something Sunny or Nate. I mean, you guys have a relationship with them. I've tried to reach out for them myself, and they've not returned my calls. So I'm not
for the IMS folks?
No, for Blackboard.
Oh, I can try to reach out to our contacts at Blackboard. Yep, I can do that.
That'd be great.
Okay.
Now, are there any, do you want any universities or?
Yeah, I mean, universities would be good.
IU would certainly be one. Nate and I were talking about IU yesterday.
Yeah, so the question is, would they send somebody to participate in the work, and or would they join the W3C to do that?
I have a call with them at today. I can bring it up.
Okay. IU is Illinois, Iowa?
Indiana University.
Indiana
University.
Indiana University. And then Eric. Okay, you're down for IU. Anyone else that should be on that list? Okay. All right. Well, I mean, so here's, I think the.
Well, Mozilla.
Mozilla's a no.
Oh, they're a no. Okay.
Yeah, I mean, you heard them in the web payments, group. I mean, unless we can get.
Well, we need a different group. Right.
Yeah.
We need somebody who's on the Badge Alliance side.
Yeah, Nate, Sonny, any thoughts on that?
I reached out to Mozilla Foundation and didn't get any answer on that.
I think if we do get Mozilla support, it will be, because as we know, Mozilla kind of operates with like one big head and one half-sized head, and that half-sized head is the Mozilla Foundation under which Open Badges originally was incubated, and sometimes those two heads clearly don't communicate. Nate is definitely working with the Mozilla folks to kind of push the conversation to make sure that there's a little bit more clear communication happening.
Okay.
Yeah, I bet we could get it to the point where they would not actively oppose the creation, but I don't know if the official representatives from the company side are going to want to jump on board, and I don't think there's any particular engineer who is involved in the work enough on the foundation side to actually be able to contribute right at the moment.
Yeah, so that would kind of put Mozilla into a no/not worth it category, unfortunately. It's very difficult to get Mozilla to support things at W3C that are not critically important to the main thing that they're focused on right now, at least on the
Pearson's not on the list either.
Yeah. So I think, okay, you're right. And although I think that's Matt Stone, and I think Pearson is a yes. I talk with Matt, and he's a yes.
Okay. And then I don't know if their members are ready. I think they are, right?
They are, yeah. Yeah, they're a clear yes. So that's good find. Good catch.
On the previous question, are you looking for a browser maker, or what exactly what role does Mozilla fill if we can't get them? What kind of a user or kind of a company are you looking for that spot?
So we have not a browser manufacturer. We know that at least the browser manufacturers have been somewhat schizophrenic when it comes to identity and credentialing on the web. So Mozilla had the Persona project. They shut it down and killed it. They turned it over to the community and have no plans to do anything with it. So I don't think we're looking for a browser manufacturer. I think the browser manufacturers would be far more disruptive to what we're trying to do. Ideally, we would have their support going into this, but based on the discussions I had at the Web Payments Face-to-Face, the browser reps that were there were not too keen about credentialing and identity on the web.
So what do you want?
Honestly, if we could get everyone on this list to say yes, or at least 75% of the ones that are blank right now to say yes, I think it's a very easy decision.
If you needed a replacement for Mozilla not being willing, never mind.
No, right now I can't think of any unless other folks in the group can think of a replacement for Mozilla. I mean, ideally we'd have Google, Apple, and Mozilla, and Opera at the table. Those are the big browser manufacturers, and those are the ones that make the API stuff work, the browser API stuff work. So we will probably give them a heads up that we're starting a group, and they should probably get involved because we expect browser involvement at some point, and then see what they see what they say. I've got good contacts at each one of the browser manufacturers. I can dig into that. I guess the question to the group is, do we want to dig into that before we start proposing charters or after? The danger being that they start voting against it, and if we get 4 votes from the browser manufacturers against it, that's going to make things pretty difficult.
After, I'd say. Okay. Based on what you've said.
Yeah, well, I mean, you saw what they did to the credential stuff at the famous face-to-face. Okay, all right, I think that's it for...
What about VeriSign?
Glenn Wiley is the VeriSign rep. He said he's been very interested in this stuff, but when it comes to actually stepping up and participating, they haven't done it. We can put him on here. VeriSign.
Is that the one who we met at the face-to-face in, in the fall?
Glenn Wiley. He just doesn't have time. But, a positive vote from them is a good thing. So I will try and chase that down. And they are.
And what about the Fed?
They have repeatedly said they are very, very interested and want to see it happen, but they have not filled the form out. So I'll chase them down, too. That's Claudia.
Yeah, because I saw him again, last week, 2 weeks ago, or whenever it was, New York, and he was still pretty hot on that.
Yeah, and it's actually Claudia. It's a Minneapolis West Coast.
And what about the Deutsche Bank? Oh, yeah, Peter. He said yes. Okay, cool.
Yeah. Although Deutsche Bank, it was a completely different person from Deutsche. Actually, hold on. Deutsche Bank. Deutsche Bank's not on here. We have Deutsche Telekom.
Yeah. The gentleman who was sitting next to you at the dinner. Isn't that the same guy?
Yeah, he's from Deutsche Telekom. He's actually from T-Mobile Labs.
Okay.
Deutsche Telekom. Deutsche Bank is also very interested. Deutsche Bank. Let me put them in here as well. Bank. And They're strong, maybe. I just need to follow up with them. Okay. Let's go ahead and put a stop on the recruiting discussion today. I mean, we have a lot of strong leads. We just need to close them out so that we can get this list to W3C management. So the sooner we can do that, the better. Because if we get, you know, let's say we get 40, that is definitely enough to do something at W3C, or at least make a very strong argument that we should do something at W3C. Especially if
you've got, can you add a, can you put a total on that column of yeses? So we can just start to do a running total here.
At some point, I can.
Okay.
I have to do a formula. And
I mean, I can do it if you give me access to the file.
Yeah, I'm giving you.
I think I only have three. Okay.
Okay, you have access. Does anyone else want access to this document? While we're on the phone. Okay, I gave you access, Eric.
You do it on my credit trust or my Gmail?
My credit trust.
Thank you.
Okay, that's it for this agenda item. Unless there's anything else on recruiting, we can move on to this whole authorization IO decentralized identifier discussion. Okay, so moving on. Sorry, Dave, you have ended up scribing almost continuously.
Hey, Dave, if you need to talk, I could take over with Nate.
Yeah, and I think Dave, it might be, I could probably take over. Dave, do you want to do, Longley, do you want to do the authorization IO did discussion, or do you want me to lead and then you follow up?
Why don't you lead and I'll follow up.
Okay, so we have been working, we meaning Credit Trust and Digital Bazaar have been working to put together a site called Authorization IO. And Authorization IO is, let me get the link to it. So Authorization IO is a demonstration platform, technology demonstration platform that will eventually become what's called a polyfill for the browser APIs that we are proposing for credentialing. So this site demonstrates the full round trip for the ecosystem that we are presenting in the credential CG use cases and the technical specifications. So it covers issuing a credential, storing a credential, and consuming a credential. And it ensures that those three services, these, you know, web-based services, can be provided by an arbitrary number of third parties. So you can have many issuers, you can have many credential storage providers or identity providers, and you can have many credential consumers, and through the standard they can interoperate. So Authorization IO is the technical proof that we have built something that can interoperate. We don't have enough time on the call to kind of go through a demo on Authorization IO, and it might be good to go through something like that in the next couple of weeks so that people kind of understand what we're trying to demonstrate here. Mainly the things up there so that we can be sure that the data structures are being finalized and the protocols are being finalized, at least from an R&D perspective, before we go into any kind of official working group. It's important to do that work before you go into a working group, so that the working group doesn't get sidetracked with doing research and development work. Okay, so at a very high level, authorization I/O is the it demonstrates the ecosystem working, and there's a very central part of authorization I/O actually the website, which is responsible for basically finding out who your identity provider is and routing requests for credential issuance and credential transfer. So, for example, if someone issues a credential to you, you will go to authorization.io, and authorization.io will hook you up with your identity provider. And that's regardless of what device you're on. So you can be on your mobile phone or a laptop or an internet cafe computer somewhere far away from where you live. And in all of those scenarios, you're redirected to the proper identity provider. Your identity provider for storing a credential. The same thing happens when you request a credential. So if it doesn't matter which device you're requesting a credential on, it doesn't matter where in the world you are, you will be sent to your identity provider to fetch the credential and send it back to the credential consumer. One way to think of this is that it provides some of the backpack functionality that the Mozilla Backpack provides today, but in a fully decentralized way. The other thing that it ensures is it ensures credential portability. So if you decide that you do not like your identity provider or they do something that is not aligned with your worldview, or you know, they you have a really bad customer experience with your identity provider, you can decide to move your credentials from that identity provider to another identity provider without getting permission from your identity provider, effectively. So this is credential portability. It's akin to cell phone number portability that we have in the U.S. and in other parts of the European Union. Okay, so that's a high level of what authorization I/O is. We have it released as, let's see, the source is available on GitHub here, right? And Eric's saying, or you can have more than one IDP. That's correct. So if you want, you know, all your work stuff to be stored at your work IDP, and you want your home life to be in a completely separate IDP, you can do that as well. Okay, so authorization I/O is on GitHub, all the code's there. You can go in and read about how it works and all that kind of stuff. Okay, so let me stop there. We do have another discussion around decentralized identifiers, but let me stop with the whole description of authorization I/O and see if anyone has any questions about it right now.
Hey, Manu, this is Nate. What happens if you know, there's a window where we want the browser vendors to implement this, and they choose not to do it for several years? What do we just continue using the polyfill? Are there consequences?
Correct. You continue using the polyfill. So the strategy is to plan for failure as far as the browser manufacturers are concerned, meaning that it is really hard to get something into the browser, and it may be years of convincing before they actually put the support in there. And we don't want the browser manufacturers to prevent us from building out this ecosystem. And so that's one of the things. We don't want to count on the browser vendors, because they have demonstrated that if you count on them to implement this stuff, it is statistically very probable that they will not, at least in the beginning. So that's one of the strategies, is don't count on the browser vendors implementing this stuff. Always have the polyfill there. That's one route. The other route is that, let's say that the browser vendors become very interested in this and they implement it, you know, immediately within 6 months. I doubt that's going to happen, but let's say they do. That is only going to take effect in the new web browsers. So new versions of Google Chrome and Firefox and Opera will work just fine with the native credential and identity APIs, but all the old ones like Internet Explorer 8 and 9 and the old versions of Firefox and Chrome will never get that stuff built into it. And as we know, businesses continue to run these pieces of software for many years after they are end of life. So we can expect those browsers to stay in the market for 5 to 7 to 10 years. And then the question becomes, what do we do with those browsers? Are they able to participate in this ecosystem we're building out, or are they not? And if we don't have the polyfill here, they will not be able to participate in the ecosystem. So the polyfill is necessary for broad adoption of this technology, and we expect authorization I/O to have to be run for at least 7 to 10 years until all these browser APIs are built into the latest versions of browsers and all the old browsers pretty much die off. Does that answer your question, Nate?
Yep, absolutely. And so as a polyfill, does it require to be centralized? Will there always only be one authorization I/O performing this polyfill role, or is there any possibility of distributing any of that or choosing a different polyfill provider?
So that's a good question. It is possible to do what you said. The engineering complexity for doing that is pretty steep. So what we are hoping is that this authorization I/O site is going to be a collectively run set of infrastructure. So organizations like, and I'm just throwing out examples here, I'm not saying any one of these organizations is going to sign up for it, but organizations like Mozilla and ETS and Digital Bazaar and AccreditTrust and Pearson may contribute some engineering resources to ensure that the site's up, you know, 24/7, 365 days a year. It ends up becoming a fairly critical piece of infrastructure. It's akin to the way, you know, the Google and Amazon websites run. There is only one google.com that people type into their address bar, but there are many, many Google data centers, and the data center that you're redirected to depends entirely on your geographic location. So we expect there to only be one authorization I/O. We expect many companies to be in charge of running certain data centers that serve up authorization I/O traffic. And we expect those data centers to be distributed around the world in London and the US and Europe and Hong Kong and places like that. The reason there can only be one authorization I/O right now is that the database that we're using has to be synced across all those data centers, because the database contains things like mappings of your email address to your identity provider and things of that nature. So the database is effectively the WebDHT, that WebDHT distributed hash table technology we're talking about. Right now, the database is a stand-in for that technology. So we don't have the WebDHT technology built out yet, and until we have that built out, the authorization I/O site has to be at least one domain. Once we build out the WebDHT technology, it is possible that you could use a different authorization I/O polyfill. That's definitely a possibility. But then the question is, like, what does that really buy you, right? We're not sure of the upside. There don't seem to be very many upsides to that.
I just want to jump in here. There's actually a number of downsides to doing that, because presently the site also functions as the browser polyfill, which is so it's the domain at which your cryptographic keys that are part of the standard are stored. So if you start using a different polyfill from a different domain, then there would have to be coordination with all of the sites that are using the system to figure out how to get you to the right domain so that your keys are available for you to transmit credentials around on the web. So it's not a technical impossibility, but it is a much more complex system if these sites need to live on different domains. These polyfills need to live on different domains.
Yeah, so I think the proposal right now is that there is only one authorization IO. There are multiple companies that have the keys to access and operate the site, access to the database, access to the virtual machines that provide the website, and all that kind of stuff. And we expect that that's how it would probably be run to, for 7 to 10 years until we can end of life the site. If we can ever do that, hopefully we'll be able to do that.
Yeah, I mean, I certainly think we will be able to do it at some point. It will have to be a long-lasting site, but at some point you can say, you know, you're going to have to upgrade to a new browser at some point, and we can tell people that the site is coming to its end.
Okay, so any other questions or comments in general about authorization IO and the role that it plays? For those familiar with the Mozilla Persona project, this is effectively what the Persona project did, only theirs was a bit more it was a bit more centralized of a service. It's something that only Mozilla ran, so it was basically something only Mozilla ran, whereas we're saying it should be a community run thing or a federation run thing. Okay, if there are no other questions or comments about authorization IO, we might want to jump into the decentralized identifiers, because that's another fairly big leap that we're making due to credential portability reasons. And so, Dave Longley, do you want to start covering the DID stuff? And Nate, I can start scribing if you'd like.
Cool, thanks.
So did you want me to go over the, I think we had, you linked in here to a conversation we had with Melvin. Is that what you wanted to discuss with respect to DIDs?
Well, how about, let's see, no, I think it's mostly the why do we have DIDs in the first place?
Right. So at some point, if you want to be able to...
Hey, guys, your voice is like, I don't know, but it's just me, but you're going in and out. You're serving in and out.
My audio seems fine from here. Is anybody else hearing Dave Longley go in and out?
Is it still doing it? I don't know.
It sounds good, and I think you talked to me directly, but for some reason it seems like you're fading out for me. But if everybody else is fine, then it's not. It's just me.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm not hearing fade. And yeah, Nate's saying he's not hearing fade either. It might be on your end, Eric.
All right. So what I was saying was, so if you want to be able to link credentials together and be able to assert that certain credentials are tied to a particular identity, and if you have some number of different credentials and you want to be able to say these all seven of these different credentials are all referring to the same entity, then you need some kind of identifier that unifies them. And that's important for some of the web payments work, and it's important for some of the work that we're doing here. And so what you could do, the simplest way to do this is to, if you want to do linked data and link this information together, you say your identifier is a URL. And if you make your identifier a URL and you use an HTTP URL, you can set up a system that will allow you to link credentials together and everything will work just fine. The problem with a system like that is if you ever want to, as a person that is using that URL, you have to make sure that you continue, that the URL, the server that exists that keeps that URL up and running has to continue to exist throughout time. And you have to continue to have rights and ownership over that URL in some way. If that were to ever change, then you run into a problem where all of a sudden these credentials that are linked to your URL will effectively become invalid because the URL has disappeared from the web. So if your URL disappears from the web, you've got a problem, and you have to get all of those credentials reissued to you. And for a lot of different types of credentials, that can be problematic, because some credentials require lengthy processes that you have to go through in order to acquire them. You don't want to have to go take another driver's test to get a new digital driver's license just because your URL went away on the web. And so that's at least one reason why, one possible problem with using an HTTP URL for an identifier. Another problem is, what if you, you're using some kind of identity provider that's provided you with a URL for your identity, and you've decided that you want to move, you want to change identity providers for whatever reason. Maybe there's one that you've decided is better, offers you better features, is more interesting to you. Maybe your current identity provider has been hacked a lot of times and is losing your identity information. You know, there's a whole variety of different reasons that you might want to change identity providers. If you want to be able to change identity providers, then you can't rely on that URL being stable, because if you change your identity providers, you lose the rights to that URL, and you don't really want your data residing there anyway. So all of a sudden you've got this, there's another problem with HTTP URLs, which is you've got vendor lock-in. So all your data is now locked up with some identity provider, and if you want to change, you've got to get all your credentials reissued to you and move all your identity information. So instead, it would be a lot better if you could tie these credentials to an identifier that is not locked to any particular HTTP URL. And so with that concept in mind, we invented something called DIDs, which are decentralized identifiers. Effectively, it's just a string. It's a piece of text that identifies you that is not tied to any particular HTTP domain. And what we would there's a number of different ways that this could be implemented in using technology, and what we would like to do is kind of bury it into infrastructure as much as possible. And because if we can push the concept of DIDs down into the infrastructure as much as possible, then people don't need to think about them or worry about them, and that's really what we'd like to do. I guess I can stop here for a second because Manu wanted to mention, he's on the queue, so go ahead, Manu.
So the other thing to mention is that this same problem exists for email addresses. It exists for anything based on a domain. So URLs are based on a domain of some kind, an internet domain. Email addresses are based on a domain of some kind. One potential solution to this that people have mentioned is creating redirecting services like w3id.org or perl.org that will redirect one system to another system. But the problem with that is that then somebody needs to manage that redirection server, and the redirection server has to work for every identity that has ever been created, every ID, decentralized ID that has ever been created on the net. And that is the way our current DNS system is managed, and for those of you that know about how many attacks these types of systems go under and how difficult and how much money it takes to run one of these systems versus a more decentralized system like BitTorrent or some of the near peer-to-peer systems, it is very expensive to try and harden pseudo-centralized systems like DNS. You know, we have heard the argument of why don't you just use a DNS-like mechanism, and the counter to that is that it is not a natural fit, and redirection mechanisms still require some organization to run the infrastructure. When what we really want to do is we want to this stuff to be far more decentralized via the WebDHT technology. If you're thinking, why don't we just use email addresses, it has the same problem as URLs. Okay, sorry, go ahead, Dave.
Right, so we looked, as you were mentioning, we looked at several different ways to try and address this problem. One of them has to do with trying to get it down in the DNS layer. I guess one way to frame this problem is to say what we really would like to have for these identifiers. We would like to be able to create identifiers that are not tied to any particular piece of content. So we don't want an identifier that's a hash that has to match some piece, some content that's out there. We don't want content addressable identifiers, because the content that these IDs refer to can change. What we want to have is this a piece of text that refers to a particular individual, and we want people to be able to claim these for themselves and have complete control over them as individuals. And we want people to be able to do that in such a way that the technology is as far away from them as possible, so they don't really even know what's going on. So those are some of the properties that we feel are required to make this decentralized identity stuff work. And so there are a number of things that we looked at that don't quite match. So there are content addressable decentralized networks, and the problem with those is that the identifiers are all tied to the content. So if your identity or your credentials or any kind of information that you've stored about yourself changes, your identifier would change. And if your identifier changes, then these credentials that have been issued to you that are linked to that identifier would no longer be valid. So that is a problem with content addressable ID spaces. We've looked at doing things with like blockchain technology, where effectively these identifiers can be public information, because we're not going to store any highly personalized information about them out on the network. So a public ledger is an okay technology to explore, and that's what blockchain technology provides. The problem with at least the way a lot of blockchain stuff has been implemented, is the addresses for people are based on a cryptographic key pair they create. So they generate a cryptographic key pair, and then their address has some grounding in that key pair. But what that means is if you ever lose your keys or you ever have a problem with your keys, all of a sudden your identifier is no good to you. And if you're talking about using like a Bitcoin system where you have a Bitcoin wallet and you need to change your wallet, or because your key's been compromised or something of that nature, you just spin up a new wallet and move your money over there and you're fine. When we're talking about your identity, that's something that's much more difficult for you to move around. You can't easily have all those credentials reissued. So there's a lot more data and stuff that's related to your identity than just talking about stored value that you have in like a Bitcoin blockchain type technology. So there's issues with trying to bootstrap this stuff and push and effectively do decentralized identifiers through blockchain technology. So there's some issues there that doesn't rule it out as a possible future technology. So effectively what we want to end up having at the end of the day is some kind of system. This is why we keep calling it WebDHT technology. It's a placeholder for a technology that we haven't invented yet, but how we would like it to work is a decentralized ID is just a piece of text that refers to somebody, and when you ask some system to give you information about that piece of text, what we want to have happen is we want a number of different HTTP servers to communicate with each other and find some temporary URL where that information lives. So if you were to ask this WebDHT, give me back the document related to my DID, to my identifier, then it would go out, use the HTTP protocol, discover where this data temporarily lives, and give you back the data. And once you have the data about yourself, it will include things like, as far as we're concerned, it would include things like, who is your identity provider? So you could ask the question of the WebDHT, for this DID, who's the identity provider? And when you do that, then you can, once you have the identity provider, you can start communicating with the identity provider using protocols that we'll create in a credentials working group to ask for credentials for that person. And then, the whole system is bootstrapped from there. The important part out of all of that is, we're trying to design a system that works using the web, using existing web protocols, and avoids the vendor lock-in, HTTP URL lock-in problem. And so that's really what DIDs are all about, and we're trying to make it work at the lowest infrastructure level we can without it going so low that we run into some of the problems that Manu was talking about, and without us jumping off into some other technology space where it's less likely to be adopted by people that are interested in the web. But that being said, that was a whole lot of information. I don't know if people have any questions about it or get the general base idea about why we want to create these DIDs and what the purpose is and the kind of technology we'd like to use to provide them.
One quick comment. The authorization IO system is an implementation of what Dave Longley just talked about. So it's not, it is not at the, it has what we feel a solid implementation behind it based on the technologies that we have been talking about in this group for the last year plus, and in the web payments group for the last, you know, 4+ years, you know, JSON-LD, linked data, digital signatures, all that kind of stuff. So we believe we have an implementation that is secure, scalable, and achieves all of the requirements that Dave pointed out. So that's what authorization IO is. It's an implementation of what Dave just said.
I want to clarify that, though. It's an implementation that functions, that has the same functional properties that of what I just described, but ultimately we want to decentralize authorization IO and move it into the future where people can set up their own WebDHT servers, companies, whoever wants to run these things, and the network will live in a decentralized way. So to be clear, as we stated earlier when we were talking about authorization IO, we only want to last 10 years or something like that. And then we want, over time, this WebDHT technology to be created and to live on a number of different servers. Eric was asking, would it be more like Napster? The technology would kind of work in that way, where there's a number of different peers that people can set up, sort of very similar to Bitcoin, and these peers would live out on the web in various places, and effectively that network on its own, you could ask it the question, I have a DID, can you please give me the DID document, and you would get a response. And at the same time, if you wanted to create a new DID for yourself, because you want to create a new identity for yourself, you could also ask the network, please give me, I'd like to register this DID for myself. And then you would have ownership over it. There would be no costs associated with it, which is very different from today where you have to go out and buy a domain, and regular people don't do that. The general public doesn't go out and buy a domain. We want people to be able to use technology to go out and grab these identifiers and get into the system with a decentralized identifier, and so that they can link up their identity with that and move it around on the web without worrying about who their identity provider is and vendor lock-in and those other issues that were mentioned.
It's kind of interesting. You know, this is really a rediscussion of the telecom world. With number portability, you can have more than one phone number. It's associated with you or an entity, and there's a methodology for distributing them. It's kind of funny to hear this conversation in a number of contexts over the years, because we had these same discussions about number portability. But you're really describing the same thing, aren't you? You're describing that process.
Where
numbers are distributed, and as long as the international dialing system works, then you can find that number. That number will ring according to a standard. I think some practical ways, if I'm wrong in that metaphor, then, you know, correct it. But I think some very practical ways like that of explaining this to people would be helpful, too.
No, it's a very good point, and it's a very good metaphor. The main difference has to do with cryptographic, you know, security and ownership over those things. We want it to be a lot more difficult for somebody to come along and, like, claim your phone number. Someone can't come along and just take your DID out from underneath you because it has
I have more complicated thoughts about the problems we're going to run into when we deal with that question. You know, levels of proof associated with breeder credentials and the level of trust you put in the DID. You know, we get a lot of questions there. I get that. I'm just starting with the basic. It's like this. That's all.
Right. Yep. No, it's a good explainer and metaphor. I'm glad that you brought it up.
Yeah, and Richard, I think, yeah, so excellent metaphor. We should start using that more. I think the some of the key differences between the way the telecom industry has decided to implement this and the way we're deciding to implement this is that the telecom industry has still centralized a lot of that number portability. So for number portability, you have to talk to a central system that understands which telco has which number and all that kind of stuff, right? Whereas what we're saying with this solution, there is a decentralized system that does that, but there is no central organization that is heavily regulated, that is heavily funded to do that. There are new types of technologies that allow us to build a system that doesn't require that kind of oversight and regulation and money to run that centralized database.
Right. Because of the cryptographic properties we want to build into the system, people, the actual owners of those DIDs have full control over them, you know, because of the technology that's there. So you don't have to go talk to send some centralized service and get your number ported. It's your number, you hold it, you move it around as you see fit.
And Nate, you said you had a number of questions as well. Do you want to go?
Yeah, we're after the hour, so we can leave them off for the mailing list or something.
Okay, all right, so we'll cover those on the mailing list. Okay, so sorry about that. I did not even see the time. We'll take the rest of this discussion to the mailing list and pick it up next week if folks feel that we need to talk about it. Primarily, this is the technology that we need to have pretty good alignment on before we start a working group. The group needs to decide whether or not this is a direction that makes sense for what we're trying to accomplish. Because if we don't have that kind of alignment before the working group starts, then we have to come up with something else that accomplishes the same sorts of goals, or we need a new set of goals. So all the new folks that come into the group, we're going to have to do this kind of background with them to tell them, you know, this is a system we've created, this is why we've created it, we care about number portability, we care about credential portability, we care about identity provider, you know, lock-in and not enabling lock-in, and things of that nature. Okay. Anything else that we should be aware of before the call next week? All right. If not, have a great week, everyone. Everyone that is recruiting, please continue to do that. Try to make it a very heavy priority. And we'll see everyone on the call next week. Thanks. Bye.
Take care.